Amanda McCreed with you, and I'm joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Kimberly Earle for Pet Chat on 2NUR RFM. Good morning.
Hello.
Welcome. I'm looking at you, Cheryl, and I can see a dog with a bone on your brooch today.
Yes, today I thought I'd talk about dog treats.
Ooh.
I know you don't have a dog, Amanda. You've got a cat.
I've got a cat.
Yeah.
Yes, I do, but...
Dog treats just aren't all what they seem to be.
They aren't?
No.
Oh, well... I'm looking forward to finding out all about that.
Yep. Look, dog treats are interesting because they work in two ways. They actually work on the human as well as the dog.
Ooh.
Yeah. Because what happens...
So hang on. So we can eat them?
No.
Oh.
No. But what it does, when a human gives a dog a treat, it makes a human feel good. So they feel warm and fuzzy, and it's like gifting the dog. In a way, it's an expression of love, and that's what's really important when you have a pet, that you are loving them. So it makes us feel good giving that treat. So that's a nice thing. But some people overgive the treats, and this is a really big problem because they're loving their dog so much, they're feeding their dog too many treats. And obesity is huge in pets, even cats, so it's a big problem. And that's an interesting incline in obesity in pets in Australia, isn't it, Kimberly?
Yeah, I think there's some research that says it mirrors, you know, what our general population is doing.
Yes.
But I think it's close to 75 to 80%. You know, of dogs and cats that we see would be overweight or obese. So it's really, really high. And to the point now where I think people look at a dog that's overweight and think it's an average weight because that's just what you're used to
normal.
Seeing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we need to really minimise our dogs being obese because this leads to a shorter life for them, an unhappy life for them as well. So while you're thinking, I'm loving my dog, I'm giving the treat, we need to really think what we're giving them. Now, the thing for the dog, treats are great because, and particularly if you've got a puppy is going to really respond to treats, and then you're going to get behaviour that's desired, you're going to undo the behaviour that you don't want, and it's just a really nice thing for a puppy. But there comes a point where you've got to decide what treats you're going to give. So not all treats are healthy. So some of the treats that we give our dogs are just full of so many additives and colourings and flavourings. Now, these obviously need to be avoided. So what we've got to do is really pay attention when we're looking at the packaging that we're buying. Look at it and read the ingredients that are listed there. Now, if you don't know one of those ingredients or you can't spell it or say it, then I suggest you avoid it.
So because it's probably bad.
Yeah, it's probably going to be something that, you know, you don't want to be giving your pet, number one. So it's so important that we look at things that are hopefully 100% meat. We don't want to be giving all of these fillers that are put into a lot of pet food. And some pet foods or treats, some of them are imported. Now, what we've got to remember, when we import anything into Australia, because we have really strict quarantine rules to prevent our country from coming into, you know, problems with disease, so these products that are imported for animals usually are irradiated, and then we're feeding them to our animals. So I really don't believe that this is a great thing to be doing. So trying to buy Australian-made where you can is a much better option. One of the things that often is used is these rawhide, and rawhide is really heavily manufactured. So it comes out of the tanning industry, and then it goes through a whole range of different chemical processes. Actually, it's quite gross if ever you want to look it up and have a look how it's processed. It really is awful. There's so many chemicals used, everything from aldehyde to arsenic, and these sometimes leave traces on the food that you're giving your dog. So just try to avoid things that are going to create any problem. Now, sometimes we give food like liver treats and things to some dogs that can have a reaction to those. So liver is, whilst it's a meat, it's very, very rich and can cause often diarrhea in dogs. So this, again, is something we've got to consider, what our dog's dietary is. And some dogs have a lot of allergies. And so if we're really looking at what food we're giving our dogs, and then you're giving them treats that are full of, you know, allergic substances for the dog, we can then create another problem. So when we're selecting the food, we just need to look at that the food doesn't contain lots of fats and lots of salts, because this is going to create issues with our dogs.
Kind of like humans.
Yeah. So a few of the things that you need to be making sure that you avoid treats that contain corn syrups and molasses and fructose, things like that. Any of those sticky substances, they actually enhance the flavour of the dog treat, but they stick to the teeth. And again, Kimberly, this is where the dental chews and dental things like that can actually cause problems with the teeth as well, from that sticky substance sitting on the teeth.
Maybe it's possible. I don't know. I find that dental treats it's hard to prove that they're doing what they say they're doing. Mm. I'm not sure that we also have any evidence that they're not doing that or that they're causing harm. Mm-hmm. Most of them are designed to either scrape things off the teeth, or a lot of them now have various enzymes that are meant to actually inhibit bacterial production. Because what damages teeth is actually bacteria in the mouth. So I'm less worried about sticky substances, mm-hmm. More worried about things that are going to promote a lot of bacterial growth in the mouth. And certainly bacteria likes to grow in a sugary substance. But I'm not sure that the treats, if they're the problem that I have, and I don't know what your dog is like, my dog will take the dental chew and bite it in half and swallow the two pieces. And there's not a lot of chewing happening that, you know, that's designed to sort of scrape those teeth. But that's very dog individual, I think.
I've got poodles, so they're not big into food at the best of times. Getting them to eat is quite a challenge.
Yeah. My cat's so bad that she eats at our place, then she goes next door for a second breakfast. She's like a hobbit.
Oh, really? Oh, and she's quite an older cat.
She is. She's 19.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. That's what's keeping her going, all these food meals.
I know. Yeah. They give her chicken and all sorts of things.
Yeah. Cheeky. So another thing we've got to look at too is foods that are cured. So anything that's cured with nitrates, these can be really dangerous to dogs as well. And just making sure that, you know, you're selecting a food that is going to, go alongside what their meal is that they're having, and it's not adding extra calories. So I just think that the most important thing is to whether you're going to pull back on how many treats you're giving and just assess what food they're having as well. But, I mean, a treat is a nice thing to give. Like I said, it's got that, you know, the human value, the dog value, but just we need to really assess just what we're doing and how many we're giving.
Can I ask a question? What's the difference between, say, a dog biscuit and a dog treat? Is there a difference?
Yeah. So, I mean, the difference is that a dog kibble, like a dry dog food, is formulated to meet all the dog's nutritional requirements. Mm-hmm. It should be formulated to meet the dog's nutritional requirements if they meet the AAFCO's standards, which is a whole other kettle of fish, because our Australian pet food industry is totally unregulated. Anybody can put anything together and call it a dog food, and that's where you're at. The thing with treats is that treats are designed to be treats, so they will not sustain your dog. They do not have all the right things to sustain your dog from a micronutrient, macronutrient, and various components subject. So it would be like you can go and eat a bag of potato chips and you can live on potato chips. There's plenty of calories in potato chips, but they're not going to give you everything you need to live a healthy, life, to keep your body going. So that's really important. Treats are meant to be treats. And I always encourage people to try to limit their dog to like one treat a day. Like if I'd have one bowl of ice cream a day, that's about all I'd have. I wouldn't have, ice cream four times. You know, we're not having breakfast, then ice cream, and then lunch, then ice cream, and then dinner, then ice cream. And so we really want to be thinking about them as treats. So,
right. Well, that's good advice.
Yeah.
Paul from Chisholm, he's got a comment about shampoo. Hi, Paul.
Hi. We've got a little terrier cross who's had some issues around licking. Now, we're slowly getting that licking under control. It's being treated as an allergy. However, what has occurred, all his fur around his inside hind legs and under his tail is now a distinct rusty colour.
Yep.
So I'm wondering, is there something we can do to restore his natural colour apart from dumping bottom into a bucket of bleach?
So that's called porphyrin staining, and that's actually iron from his saliva. So he's got iron in his blood, and it's actually iron that leaches out into his saliva. And it's an indication, I'm afraid, that he is still licking. And so it will go away actually on its own with regular shampoo and some gentle washing. You actually can. I have the same issue with my dog who licks her feet, and it only takes me a get 2 seconds to look at the bottom of the feet and see that they're all, you know, red, like that you get that rust color, and you can go, oh, you've been licking at your feet again. So it will actually go away relatively quickly, just with, you know, a couple shampoos with some regular shampoo, if the dog has stopped licking. But if they're continuing to lick, the skin particularly, the hair can take a little bit longer for the color to clear. The skin, the color's typically actually coming from the skin itself. And you can often take, we'll use a little chlorhexidine scrub in consult and give that skin a bit of a scrub, and you'll really see the brown staining come up off of the skin onto the scrubby pad. So it will come away. But if the dog is still rusty, it means he's still licking, and we still need to be working closely with our veterinarian to try to help with that. And just be patient, because these are really frustrating cases. I totally understand that they're really frustrating cases, but just be persistent and you'll get it under control.
Good luck with that, Paul. Okay, next on the line, we've got Belinda from Blackalls Park. Belinda, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was just wondering, I have a Shih Tzu cross Maltese dog, mm-hmm. a little boy. He's about 4 years old, and I get him a good quality dry pet food, but I've seen a lot of posts on social media lately of people like activating the dry food by adding like a little bit of water or chicken stock, and also saying things like you should put a raw egg on them and other things. So yep. I'm just wondering,
does he eat the dry food the way you have it?
Yeah, he's happy to eat it the way I have it.
Yeah, then he doesn't need anything.
No, am I supposed to? No.
Nah, he doesn't. And the only thing you're going to activate, I mean, they like it. And sometimes when my dog is acting really picky, I will just pour a bit of hot water from the kettle on it. What that does do is it brings out the smells. And so if you do have a dog who's a bit picky, sometimes the increased smell will encourage them to eat. But if he's eating the dry food the way it is, you're not adding any nutritional value by adding warm water. You know, eggs here and there, there's no problem with it, but he doesn't need it. If you're feeding a good quality mainstream food, he'll be getting everything he needs out of it, and there's not really any need to, you know, to do that. And again, eggs, just like for you and I, eggs have high cholesterol, and so we can see dogs, you know, developing cholesterol issues and obesity if they're getting lots of eggs as well. So if he's eating it the way he is, then don't mess with it. It's fine. He likes it.
Thanks, Belinda. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM. Hello, Maureen.
Yes, hello.
Now, you've got a 7-year-old cat who eats everything.
And I mean everything, yes. He's a vacuumer if you're doing any cooking.
Yep.
He goes around and cleans the floor.
Okay.
Yeah, but he chews underwear, bra straps.
Right.
Oh, you do mean everything.
Yeah, so he's like fabric. He's a fabric cat, is he?
Yes.
Was he a hand-reared kitten? Was he reared by somebody, or was he parent-reared?
No. Someone said that he could have been a bottle kitten.
Yeah, bottle-fed kittens, exactly. They have a tendency to develop a penchant for sucking and chewing on fabrics and cloth and things like that. We don't really know why, but obviously there's something to do with the you know, a different socialization that they're missing when they're not being reared by a cat. So it's not only those cats that will do it, but it does seem to be quite high in the proportion of cats who were bottle fed
right.
that they develop this problem.
Yeah, I've got two cats, and they're both from the same breed, like that mother.
Yep.
And the other one's just normal.
Yeah. you've got one slightly special cat, yeah. So, I mean, it's a hard habit to break, I'm afraid. The thing that I would encourage you to do, he's still a young cat, I would encourage you to research a little bit on foraging, like forage feeding for your cat, because he may need to just have a little bit more stimulation. And so some cats really thrive with the idea of hunting. Now, we don't necessarily want to, you know, have him hunting, but we want him to think he's hunting. And there's some great forage feeding toys available on the market and some great YouTube videos that will give you an idea of how to help your cat forage feed. And sometimes it's toys, but sometimes it's just making a little treasure hunt of, you know, a few little piles of dried biscuits around the house in different spaces that he can go around and actually find them. You know, you have to get him used to it a little bit, but that is sometimes enough to just give them a sense of calmness and achievement, and they're like, oh, I've done some work, now I can chill out and relax, and that can be really helpful. So have a look online for a few toys, and YouTube has some great forage feeding videos about cats, and hopefully you'll find something there. You might try the Fear Free Happy Homes website. They might have some forage feeding tips for you as well.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good.
Right, yeah. Well, thank you very much. I will try it.
Great.
Thanks, Maureen. Good luck with that. Okay. Next, we've got Bruce on the line from Curry. And you've got a young pup that gets excited and pees everywhere, Bruce.
That's correct. Now, he's half Staffy, and we're not sure of the other half because he's a rescue dog.
Mm-hmm. How old is he?
He's going on to two.
Oh, okay. So he's not really a puppy anymore. He's still a dog. Like, he's a dog now, an adult. But yeah, okay.
Whenever someone's coming in the yard, he doesn't bark. He just gets so excited and he jumps around. And while he's doing that, he's just weeing everywhere.
He's just weeing everywhere. Yeah.
And so he'll plonk in front of you, which just about knocks you over.
Yeah.
And he's just got so much wee, it's unbelievable.
Flops himself over onto his back, and he's got the little fountain that ends up on your shoe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally. So, I mean, a lot of this is just about he's not learned to control his bladder in a situation where he's excited, and some of these dogs will be showing excessive amounts of submission. Like, it can be a submissive behavior that he's sort of trying to show, you know, that he's like, I understand that you're, you know, sort of above me. So sometimes it's just excited, and I'm just so happy to see you. But sometimes, particularly when they do that flop over, sometimes it is a bit of a submission sort of thing. The things we need to do is try to give him a reason to sort of hang on to it, try to help him to reduce his level of excitement. And so, like, I always encourage people, it's not always possible, but I will always encourage you to try to anticipate when you've got people coming over, or just ask someone before they just come into your yard or come up to the door to just send you a text message if you know them, that sort of thing. Give you an opportunity to put the dog on the leash and just pause. And if you can, if you've got enough time, ideally you would take him out on the leash, ask him to go to the toilet, and then with him on the leash, where hopefully he'll be a little bit more calm, you can then greet the people at the door. But the idea would be to try to lower his level of arousal so that he's not getting so stimulated. And like, I know some dogs, as soon as they hear somebody walking up the front steps, you know, there's a wooden veranda, they can hear that clump, clump, clump up the steps, and they're off and they're excited. And the heightened level of arousal starts right from there. So we just want to try to calm him down before, you know, people walk in and before he's starting to wee everywhere. But teaching him how to urinate on a command word, so giving him, you know, treat him again a little bit like a puppy, put him on a leash, take him out to the toilet, and ask him to pee. Give him a word, make sure everybody in the house is using the same word. If you can teach him to pee on command, then when you know you've got somebody coming over, you can pop him on a leash, take him outside, get him to do his business, and then he doesn't have the big full bladder, you know, so he can squirt everywhere. The other thing, sometimes it's helpful if he is an entire male. Sometimes it's helpful to desex them. I don't know where he's at, you know, with that, but that can be helpful in some cases, but it's not everything. So
that calm him down, does it?
It can help, yeah. And sometimes it can just help with their level of excitement and arousal. You know, even if he's not showing any signs of aggression, those sorts of things, it can in some cases make these guys just a little bit calmer and can help them to just sort of feel a bit more secure in their own space. They don't have to defend it or protect it or, you know, sort of be excited about people coming into the yard to the same degree.
Yeah, there's never been any aggression. You're just so happy to see anybody, really.
Yeah.
And somebody new, and he just crashes into you, but unfortunately he's weeing at the same time.
Yeah.
And now he wants a rub, but where do you rub? And, you know,
he's covered in wee, yeah. So, I think getting him on a leash, for one, because you don't really want him crashing into people either. I mean, it's not very nice to have your knee sort of, you know, smacked into as well. But get him on a leash, get him used to doing that, and see if you can have a little treat there. And we want to remember to reward the calm behavior. So if you've got him on a leash sitting beside you and he can greet, you know, the people from a bit more of a distance, and once he's calm, encourage them to give him a treat once he's calm. But we want to try to not reward that really eccentric, excited behavior. So,
Joe from Weston, you've got a problem with a dog that tears up everything.
Yeah.
What's happening?
Well, when we go out, he's only 6 weeks old. What if he's 6 months old and he's ripped all the front? When we go out, he's only a Jack Russell miniature fox, and we leave him inside. We left him and so on. We come home and he had all the carpet ripped up in the front door.
Right. Okay. So he's and a puppy.
And then I got a thing and I put him out the back like one of those gates like they have for kids.
Yeah,
and,
like a baby gate.
Yeah. And then he chewed all down the door frame.
Okay. Yeah. So I mean, puppies at this stage are, you know, they're pretty high energy. They're not sleeping as much as they used to when they were younger. Right. We really need to increase their exercise quite often. So, you know, the things that I'd make sure that you're taking him for at least one walk a day, but ideally he'd be going out for, you know, probably 2 half-an-hour brisk walks a day. We need to really be, you know, that breed of dog, like Jack Russell's, Fox Terriers, they are high, high energy dogs. So we're needing to be burning off some of that energy. I would also, you know, we often talk about giving them a job to do. So get yourself some feeding toys, some Kongs, those sorts of things. Stop feeding him out of a dog dish. Start making him work for his food, because that's going to use up some of his mental energy as well to try, you know, so he's not taking it out on your house and furniture and things like that.
Toys, and he plays with his toys.
Yep. He does play with his toys?
Yeah.
Yeah, great. Yeah, so that's good. But like I said, look for some feeding.
I wake up at night time for about 3 or 4 hours and things like that and go out shopping.
Yeah.
It sounds like he don't want to be on his own.
Yeah, so I was going to say, like, this is the time where they sometimes will start to develop some anxieties as well. So you may want to have a chat to your local vet about some things that we can do to try to help reduce his anxiety. There's some pheromone therapies you could look at, pheromone collars or pheromone diffusers for him. And I also think you really need to strongly think about crate training this dog. So getting him a nice, safe crate, something that he can be in, that you're going to have to train him to be in there, but so that he's not injuring your property. And, you know, like dogs who chew on houses and, you know, door frames and stuff like that, they often injure themselves doing it as well. So I think having a discussion about, you know, with your local vet or a fear-free dog trainer about how to crate train him to keep him safe and to keep your property safe is really, really important at this age. So those are the things that I would start with, because it sounds like he's, you know, creating a bit of a chaotic environment. So
doing your RFM, this is Pet Chat. We've got Robin on the line and she's got a problem with a cat peeing outside the litter tray. Hi, Robin.
Hi. Yeah, she pees in and on the tray and on the floor, like in one go.
Okay, as in she's standing in the... Is she in the tray and, like, the aim is not good, or she will do both as a willful act?
It's all at once, I think. I haven't seen her do it, but she's been doing it for a year now. And so it's right on the edge of the cat tray, in the tray, on the tray, and then under the tray, like, you know, on the floor.
Yeah, okay. And how old is your cat? Is she a young cat, old cat?
No, she's 10.
Oh, so it's a bit of an older cat. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these things are always complex. You know, urination issues or inappropriate urination issues in cats can be quite challenging. The first thing I would always say is in an older cat, sometimes they're experiencing some arthritis and it's actually getting more tricky for them to actually negotiate being in and around the litter tray. That may or may not be your cat, but it's always worth having them checked out, see if there's any signs of hip pain, back pain, those sorts of things. We want to really make sure some cats do get a bit more persnickety as they get older and they really prefer to have, you know, a super clean litter tray. So if you think that the issue is just that, you know, she's not like, this particular time, I won't go in the litter tray because there's already some wee in there. Some cats will refuse to use a litter tray that's already been soiled once. So we may need to really look at litter tray hygiene and see what's going. The design of litter trays, you know, it's actually a topic of much research in the veterinary behavior field, because as pet owners, we have an idea about what is suitable for a litter tray, you know, and lots of times we like to have them in corners of out of the way, corners near the, like the laundry room is classic, right? So we want to put it near the laundry room or near the back door where it's easy to get out to the rubbish bin. Sometimes we like to put lids on them. And there's quite a lot of information that sort of tells us that cats actually would really prefer to have the litter tray not covered, but they would really like it to be in the back of a cupboard so that they can go into the closet and not have anybody see them, and they know that nobody can sneak up on them, you know, those sorts of things. Oh. So, what works for us for litter trays for cats doesn't always work for cats. So it's worthwhile. You can probably find some good information on that just online. If you Google, you know, what do cats like for litter trays, it's quite different to how we would sort of think about it. And like I said, as they get older, sometimes they get a little bit more persnickety, and we may need to look at what we're doing with it. But it may just be that your cat's not able to squat down as low anymore, and so instead of the wee going down into the tray, it's actually going out over the edge, and that could be an arthritis issue. So it's definitely worthwhile checking in with your vet and seeing if there's anything that they can identify or help with.
Good luck with that, Robin. We've got about a minute and 20 seconds left. We want to do the dog and cat of the week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, before we do that, we're going to give the Dozer and Co. voucher to Maureen from Metford. Congratulations, Maureen. All right. Nomad is the cat of the week. Let's have a look.
One and a half year old domestic short hair. He looks like he's a domestic medium hair. He's got a bit of a longer fur on him. This is a black and white medium haired cat. The write up says she's a little bit of an independent cat, not very demanding for attention, and maybe a little bit standoffish. So that might just mean that she needs a bit of time to settle into your home. She might be a little bit nervous. They don't think she's going to be suitable to be in a house with a dog or potentially with children, maybe older children. So if you're looking for a nice sort of laid-back, easy cat who's maybe not going to be too demanding of your lap time, then she might be right for you.
And a Lockie.
This is a little 14-month-old Cavoodle, so he's not quite technically a puppy, but, you know, pretty young little dog. He is also a little bit of a shy boy, and it sounds like he's got a bit of training that he's going to need, and maybe we'll need to manage a little bit of anxiety with him. So it says he's not a big fan of loud noises, he's not great on a walk yet, not a fan of children, again, probably because they make lots of loud noises. But he is young, so there is some potential there to really sort of turn him around with somebody who's got, you know, a lot of patience and time and who, you know, really wants to help socialize him. I suspect that this is a situation where he maybe didn't get the socialization that he needed when he was young, and now the whole world just seems like it's a very big, scary place for him. So he's nice and young, though, so he's a dog who's likely to be quite active, and he's also likely to be quite healthy, so that's a bonus.
Excellent. Well, if you'd like to check out those the dog and the cat of the week, you can go to 2NURFM.com.au. And that is the end of Pet Chat. Thank you, Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Kimberly Earl. Hopefully we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.